All right, our second presentation will be given by Dr. Preseet Kulkarn from the New Jersey perspective on Hurricane Sandy. Dr. Kulkarn is a CDC Epidemic Intelligence Service officer assigned to the New Jersey Department of Health. He is a native of Texas and attended Rice University in Houston, where he graduated summa cum laude with a bachelor's degree in chemistry. He attended medical school at Baylor College of Medicine, and where he completed the specialized international health track. After medical school, he continued residency training in combined internal medicine and pediatrics at Baylor, and he remained there an extra year to serve as chief resident in the Department of Medicine. After residency, he went directly into the EIS program, where he has been assigned to New Jersey. Proceed.
Okay. Can everybody hear? Okay. Is it okay? Excellent. Well, thanks so much for coming to this morning's session. What I'm going to talk about this morning is the system that New Jersey used for mortality surveillance after Hurricane Sandy. We just heard a very nice presentation about New York City, and it was really more of a global overview of excess mortality and different causes of that. This is actually going to be more about, on an individual level, how do you find these deaths, and how do you, and there was a question about attributing them to a disaster or not. So that's what this presentation is going to talk about. So suppose we start off by asking a very straightforward question. How many people died as a result of Hurricane Sandy in the state of New Jersey? It seems like a very simple and straightforward question to answer, but actually it is much more complicated and nuanced than we might first think, and certainly it was before I started looking into it. So before I go into the details of how we might try to answer this question, perhaps we should first ask, is this an important question we should be looking at in the first place? And I think it is, for a variety of reasons. So first, during a disaster, you need an accurate count of the number of deaths. The public and the media in particular want to know this number. It's often reported in the news, and people want to know how many people have died as a result of something. In addition, it gives you some sense of the impact of an event. So for example, if during a certain event, 2 people die, and in another event, 100 people die, that gives you some sense of the magnitude of the event. Now, that's not the be-all and end-all of the impact of a particular event, but it gives you some sense. In addition, understanding deaths in real time can lead to better response efforts. So, for example, if you know that in a particular area certain people are dying because of something very specific, in real time, response efforts and resources can be directed towards that area for that particular reason. And then finally, disaster-related death classification is needed for a number of things, including family death benefits, which is something I'll come back to later on in the presentation, disaster preparedness going forward, future disaster-related research on this topic, and then never to be forgotten, funding, because if you know, for example, that due to certain types of events, people tend to die as a result of certain causes, then appropriate funding can be allocated towards those ends in the future. So what we hope to talk about this morning is we want to understand and describe the system that New Jersey used for mortality surveillance after Hurricane Sandy. What was the role of the electronic death registration system, which was just alluded to in one of the last questions, in our system? And then if the EDRS was not a part of our routine surveillance system, can it be used to enhance our current surveillance system? And before I go into that in more detail, I just want to touch briefly on the topic of medical examiners, because it's very crucial to this subject. And now, just so you know, in every state, there's a different system of medical examiners or coroners, and there's some technical differences between what that means, and experts sort of know the differences between those. But every state, suffice it to say, every state has its own system. In New Jersey, we have a system of medical examiners only for death investigation purposes. It's a decentralized system. And what I'm going to tell you is true for New Jersey, and in general, true for medical examiners around the country. So in general, medical examiners are licensed physicians who have a background or training in forensic pathology, and some at least in general anatomic pathology, but often in forensic pathology. And their role is to investigate certain types of deaths. So in general, those include any death which appears to be non-natural in any way whatsoever, or accidents, injuries, crime, and disasters, which is sort of a non-natural form of death if you were to die during a disaster. And I just want to make one point about medical examiners here. It's not as though they review every single death that occurs at any time in their jurisdiction. They must be notified or requested to investigate a death. It's not as though they're going to see every single death that occurs at any time. They are in a situation where somebody has to contact them to come investigate a particular death. So, as was discussed in the previous presentation, Hurricane Sandy was a Category 3 hurricane that affected a lot of states, and it made landfall in New Jersey at the end of October, so about 2.5 years ago. So, what was New Jersey's strategy for mortality surveillance after Hurricane Sandy? It was largely directed by our Office of the State Medical Examiner. And what the office did was, in the days leading up to the storm, they made specific contact with all the county and regional medical examiners spread throughout the state. There's roughly, in New Jersey, there's roughly 10 to 15 county or regional medical examiners spread around the state. And they actually made contact with them, and they said, okay, if you get notified, since you guys are medical examiners, if you get notified about any Sandy-related deaths, then immediately notify the Office of the State Medical Examiner. So send us an email, give us a call, whatever. Do something to notify us in real time about these deaths as they're occurring and as you're being notified about them. And then the Office of the State Medical Examiner maintained a line list of these deaths as the reports were coming in from the county and regional medical examiners. So it was kept centralized at the Office of the State Medical Examiner as they were getting these reports. So just to show you this graphically, how the information flowed in this system. So I put here at the bottom, the first step is healthcare providers and law enforcement. And the reason I'm doing that is because these are the two groups which are most likely to come into contact with deceased persons first. So, for example, if somebody gets hurt during a disaster and they show up to the hospital, then they subsequently die in the ER or after being admitted or whatever, then their physicians are going to be the ones who see them and certify that death. And then it would be incumbent upon them to call the medical examiner if they think that death was due to the disaster. Similarly, if somebody dies in the community, like at home or somewhere else, and they're found by their neighbor or their family member or something like that, then the entity that they're likely to call is law enforcement. And then law enforcement would know to call a medical examiner to come investigate this death if it seems to be non-natural in any way. So these are the two groups which are most likely to sort of make an outreach to medical examiners. And so the next step there would be that they would contact county and regional medical examiners about these cases, and then they would investigate those deaths, and if they thought that death was due to Hurricane Sandy, then they would notify the Office of the State Medical Examiner, which was maintaining this line list, which I just described before. And then the State Medical Examiner would pass up this information to the Office of the Attorney General and other senior state government officials. And you might ask here for a second, if you're not sort of familiar with medical examiners, well, why is the Attorney General involved in this situation at all? And it just so happens that in New Jersey, the State Medical Examiner's Office actually sits in the Department of Law and Public Safety, not in the Department of Health. And it varies from state to state. In some states, the State Medical Examiner sits in the Department of Health. In other states, they sit under the Attorney General. And so this is how it is in New Jersey. And the reason for that is that many medical examiner investigations tend to be criminal investigations. And so that's the reason why they sometimes report to the Attorney General. So, using this system, how many deaths were identified in New Jersey after Hurricane Sandy? With this system of people reporting in to county and regional medical examiners and then up to the state medical examiner. The answer is 36. So that's the number of Sandy-related deaths that this system identified. So everything seems to be working well, looks to be good, no problems, that's the number, all hunky-dory. But, so, a few weeks after the storm, the state medical examiner's office received a request from the New Jersey Department of Human Services to review death benefit applications to the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA. Okay, so what do I mean by this? After or during a disaster, if FEMA is involved, then in certain situations, family members of people who died as a result of that event can apply for benefits to offset the costs of funerals and other such things. And so in New Jersey, this had been set up by FEMA and the Department of Human Services in order to provide death benefits to relatives of people who had died as a result of the storm. And so what happens is people turn in these applications, and one of the things you have to prove when you turn in such an application is, yes, my loved one's death was in fact due to the disaster. Not, oh, my loved one just happened to die, you know, sometime after the storm, and okay, I'm trying to get some money. So the FEMA and the Department of Human Services have to figure out a way to differentiate between real deaths that were actually due to the storm and ones that weren't. And so one of the ways that they can do that, and I'll talk about this going forward, is that on the death certificate, which they can obtain a copy of, if it says such and such died as a result of the Hurricane Sandy, it's pretty unequivocal. They definitely died as a result of that. But if the death certificate doesn't say that, and they don't have any other proof that their loved one died as a result of the storm, what are they going to do? So FEMA and the Department of Human Services were getting these applications, but they couldn't tell whether these deaths were actually due to Hurricane Sandy or not. So they turned to the state medical examiner, and they said, okay, well, we have all these applications. We'd like you to provide a medical opinion on whether you think these deaths were due to Hurricane Sandy or not. And so the medical examiner took these applications and did just that, and by doing so, identified 39 additional Sandy-related deaths that had not been identified through the routine surveillance mechanism. So just to show you that more fully here, at the end, the final line list had 75 deaths. 36 of these were the ones I had described before, which were identified by county and regional medical examiners through the usual surveillance system. And then these 39 were the ones I just referred to that were identified through review by the state medical examiner of these FEMA death benefit applications. But the point I'm trying to drive home here is that only 36 out of those 75 deaths were actually identified through the normal way. These other 39 sort of were coincidentally found because this request happened to come through. If that request hadn't come, the number would have stayed at 36, and we would have never known that there were more than double the actual number of deaths that were due to Hurricane Sandy. So just to show you that mathematically, the sensitivity of the system was only 48% in terms of identifying Sandy-related deaths. So I want to shift gears slightly now and talk about the electronic death registration system. One of the questions we asked was, you know, was the EDRS part of the surveillance system? And the answer is no. As we saw, I haven't made any reference to this in the normal routine way that these deaths were reported. So the question was, can using EDRS improve this sensitivity of 48%? So just a quick background on New Jersey's EDRS. So the Office of Vital Statistics and Registry within the Department of Health maintains death records. And this system has been electronic in New Jersey since 2006. Actually, it was one of the first states to have an electronic system. And currently, more than 99% of all the deaths that occur in New Jersey are certified electronically using this system. So when somebody dies, a death record is completed, and that's created usually by a physician or a funeral director. The medical information and the death certification part is completed by a physician. Usually it can be, for the vast majority of deaths, it can be the treating physician who actually saw the person and pronounced the death, or perhaps their primary care physician or such. Or it can be a medical examiner. And a medical examiner would certify a death when they've been requested to investigate that death. Then they become responsible for filling out the medical portion of the death certificate. So, What I did was the final line list had 75 deaths on it. Those 36 plus 39 and 75. So I asked the Office of Vital Statistics to provide me with the original death certificates for all of those 75 deaths. And they actually sent them to me in a packet. And I reviewed them one by one. And the goal was to see whether, not knowing anything else about these people, could I tell from the death certificate that these deaths were due to Hurricane Sandy or not, just by looking at them. And what I looked for was one of these key words: drowning, hurricane, sandy, tree, fell, storm, flood, and water. And so I went one by one, and if I found anywhere on the death certificate one of these words, I would say, okay, I can tell from this death certificate, independent of anything else, that this death was due to Hurricane Sandy. And so how many out of 75 had at least one of these words? Answer is 24. So roughly a third of the death certificates, you could independently tell that these deaths were due to Hurricane Sandy. And now you might be asking, well, how did I pick these words as the words to use? And that would be a good question. So the answer is, honestly, there's not a lot of work on using EDRS during disasters. Now, there are folks at CDC and others who are starting to look into this, but EDRS as a concept is relatively new. And so there hasn't been a lot of work on, well, using certain keywords to search for certain disaster-related deaths and such. So honestly, we picked the best combination that we thought would be most accurate. So why are these deaths not being detected? Why is it only roughly 50% in the normal surveillance system and only about a third on the death certificates themselves? So in the case of the surveillance system, sometimes there's a lack of knowledge about when to notify medical examiners about cases. I'm a licensed physician from Texas, and during sort of standard medical education, either in medical school plus residency, there's not necessarily a lot of time that's devoted to this particular topic. I sort of remember hearing about it briefly, but many people may not necessarily know, oh, this is a disaster-related death. I really need to call a medical examiner about this. And not through any fault of their own, they just may not know. Second, and this was one of the first questions that was asked in the previous presentation, was sometimes there's a lack of consensus about what actually defines a disaster-related death. And it's kind of complicated. So, for example, if during a disaster I'm outside and a tree falls on me, not that I want that to happen, but if a tree were to fall on me, I think most people would agree that that is a disaster-related death. Now, let me give you another example. Because of a disaster, somebody can't leave their home, and then they can't get a refill on their medication. Then 1 week later, they have a heart attack, and then 1 week later, they die of complications from their heart attack in the hospital. Now, is that death due to the disaster? You might say yes, and it's an indirect cause, but you can create all sorts of scenarios all the way, you know, leading out for months and months and perhaps even years, where you think whether or not these deaths are related to that disaster. So it's a tricky question to answer sometimes. Now, in the EDRS, probably the number one reason why you can't identify these deaths as Sandy-related is because there's variability in death certificate completion. And this, honestly, that topic could be an entire 30-minute lecture on its own, how to complete a death certificate. But suffice it to say that many physicians, myself included, never received any sort of formal training on how do you fill out a death certificate. It's not necessarily the fault of physicians. They may not necessarily know that epidemiologists like me are coming along later looking at those and trying to figure out stuff, or that those death certificates are going to be used for families to get death benefits later on. I don't think most people sort of know that de facto. So what do you do about all of this? So one recommendation is, of course, education for clinicians on the role of medical examiners. Another would be a standardized case definition for disaster-related mortality that all stakeholders agree upon. And actually, CDC, CSTE, and NAFSIS, which is the National Association for Public Health Statistics and Information Systems, is working, all of them are working on such a consensus case definition just now, actually. Finally, further education on death certificate completion. And then this was a question, I think, that came up in the previous talk as well. You know, consideration of modifying the death certificate. Now, there's no firm recommendations here, but potentially some jurisdictions have considered adding some kind of alert or some other way to prompt people to think about whether this death was related to a disaster or not. And then, as a general point, mortality surveillance should be a part of future disaster planning overall. Now, future disaster planning is, of course, a huge topic, and mortality surveillance would be just a small part of that, but it should at least be a part of the conversation generally. So I just want to thank all the people who helped with this work and with this presentation. So thank you very much, and I'm happy to take any questions. Yes? Yeah, that's a very good question, because I wanted to do exactly that. Suffice it to say that the data are slightly too incomplete to actually answer that specific question. But I try to actually find the answer to that, but it wasn't available to me, unfortunately. Yes, sir?
So for the additional cases that were identified by the medical examiners,
yes.
Did they have to do follow-up, or was it just a case of a situation where it wasn't reported through that method? What happened there?
Yeah, so basically they got these applications. Okay, so people sent in these applications to FEMA and the Department of Human Services and said, we'd like to get these death benefits for this, you know, our family member who died. And so then they had, you know, roughly, the numbers are roughly around 200 or so, where they couldn't necessarily, I think a total of 200 or so, about 100 or so, where they couldn't tell whether or not this death was related to the storm or not. Okay, so then they passed that on to the state medical examiner's office. And then what did they do? So they got that information, and honestly, I don't have a sort of a detailed methodology of what the state medical examiner's office did, but in my conversations with them, it was a whole host of things. So they would review that person's medical records. They would sometimes speak to the family. They would sometimes speak to the docs who took care of that person. They would try to get any and all information they could to try to figure out whether that death was actually due to disaster or not. And then in the end, they got this additional 39 that they identified by doing this. But it was through a variety of different ways, like I said, including speaking to the family, speaking to their physician, or reviewing their medical records, et cetera. Yes, ma'am. I think you were.
Mm-hmm. So these 39 individuals, you had two systems initially that you were using to identify deaths due to Sandy, law enforcement and
right.
So they weren't identified through either.
Correct. So I answer your second question first. The question is, do you think you're missing any? You know, we got 36, 39. I hate to speculate. I guess it's certainly possible, but it's hard to say 100% at this point. To answer the first question, which is, did the 39, did they ever come into contact with healthcare providers or law enforcement who theoretically would have or could have or should have notified medical examiners about those deaths? I'm not privy to all the details of that review process, so I actually don't have all of that information, but my supposition would be that they almost certainly must have come into contact with healthcare providers, at least, if you know, and potentially law enforcement. But many of them, for example, if they were reviewing medical records, they must have come into contact with healthcare providers. So I don't have the detailed numbers as far as, okay, out of those 39, 14 of them were from healthcare providers and 25 of them. So I don't have that level of detail. I'm not privy to that information. But my supposition would be, just knowing everything I know, that probably they did come into contact with people who could have or should have notified medical examiners. Absolutely. I think, Amy.
It was great, of course. And two questions. One is during the state medical examiner's investigation, was there any feedback given to the local medical examiners as to how they could better record these deaths in the future so they would be picked up kind of through a normal mechanism? And then my second question is, when you did your keyword review on the death certificate, what was written down? Were they more indirect deaths? What did you find?
So the answer to the first question was, any feedback given to county and regional medical examiners? I honestly don't know 100%. I mean, this is now, I was looking at it, you know, maybe a year and a half or even 2 years after things had occurred. And actually, our office, it's very complicated. Our office of the state medical examiner, actually, the person, it's changed. Now the person is not necessarily there. So there's been some turnover and differences. So I'm honestly not 100% sure. One of the things we may do going forward, since there's about 10 to 15 regional and county medical examiners in New Jersey, is potentially do some outreach to them or talk to the Office of the State Medical Examiner about doing that. None of that has been decided specifically, but that's potentially something to do. Yeah. And now your answer, your keyword. This is not a plant. I actually had this. I had this slide. This is not a plant. So what else was written? Actually, I had included this in the talk, but I didn't have time. So okay. So as I said, 24 out of 75 had those Sandy-related keywords. So what else was written? That's what I wanted to know. So I looked. So sometimes it's very non-specific. Cardiac disease. Cardiopulmonary arrest. So you can't, that's the ultimate cause of death for everybody. From everything is cardiopulmonary. So you don't know, right? Now, this one's interesting. Smoke inhalation and carbon monoxide poisoning. You could say, well, I should have included that in my keywords. And you could make a strong argument for the fact that I should have done that. And potentially you could, and that would maybe, up it to, 40 or 50% instead of 30%. But it's like, where do you stop? Right? I could start saying anything, because I can think of all sorts of ways where people could have died from a disaster from any different number of mechanisms. So ultimately, I think it comes down to sort of, the key would be, this death is due to Hurricane Sandy, so. Yes?
I don't really have a question, but just a discussion point. I'm really struggling with between the first definition and the second one, because you are really digging into very specific keyword search that we traditionally would connect with a disaster, but then the initial presentation was about this ecologic analysis, where you actually see things like Alzheimer's and other things that, it's hard to argue against that when it's related to zip codes and floating. So it's how do we really do disaster mortality surveillance that actually accurately addresses the death? Because, whether I die because a tree fell 2 days later or just that day, or I die because I had Alzheimer's and, my caretaker wasn't there or I was transported, it's still a death that's associated with that disaster.
That's an excellent comment. I was actually thinking the exact same thing when I was sitting here. And what I can say is there are some death classification systems out there already, and I know CDC is working on potentially putting out a newer sort of more extensive one of that. But they sort of divide direct, indirect, all sorts of different ways of classifying these deaths. So some of that is already out there. The bigger issue is time, because it's really tough. If somebody dies a year later from something, it's in sort of large-scale statistics, we might be able to see something, but it's really hard to know that individual person died as a result of something that happened a year ago. The best example of this, if you keep up with the news, is that in August of last year, I don't know if you guys remember, but back in this was reported in August of last year. In 1981, there was an assassination attempt on President Reagan. During that assassination attempt, President Reagan was shot. In addition, A Secret Service worker was shot, a Secret Service agent, and President Reagan's press secretary, James Brady. And as a result of that gunshot wound, I think it was to the head, he was wheelchair-bound for the rest of his life. He passed away in August of 2014, last year, and his death was ruled a homicide by a medical examiner in Virginia. And people were very confused. Well, why is this death a homicide? Nothing happened. Now, I don't know the details of the circumstances of his death, but in general, he had complications as a result of being wheelchair-bound after being shot. And so the logic was, well, he got shot, you know, the getting shot was a, you know, non-natural form of injury. And because of that, he was wheelchair bound. And then 30 years later, he died as a result of complications of being in a wheelchair. Now, is that death due to that injury? I mean, maybe that's how it was ruled at the time. So it gets very complicated, to say the least. But that's the best example I know. Okay, yes.
Issue that, you know, that is they're very fragile individuals, that so medical intervention doesn't work or whatever. And we you know, where do you draw the line that a health care event or the treatment actually caused their demise versus the actual cerebral palsy or whatever birth defect that they were born with? So those are things we struggle with all the time. And to get the medical community to recognize that in the NICU, an infection shouldn't happen if it's preemie, but then their idea is because they were so fragile with preemies, we can't. It's kind of a chicken and egg. So there are a lot of those kinds of determinations that are made every day. And how do you properly assign the information to the certificate? It's a struggle.
Very tricky. Rebecca, you have a comment.
Yeah. Two things I wanted to say. I think you brought up a really good point about methods. I think that there is that challenge of, you know, with heat, there's this thing of identifying heat deaths during a heat wave, but also the all-cause mortality, one in all respiratory. So, you know, I think it's something with the CSC disaster subcommittee to kind of keep that. But I think for immediate public health, you really want to know. When you have a carbon monoxide death and a, you know, three deaths in a jurisdiction, we want to know about that immediately. The other thing I thought about was, have you considered maybe presenting this to the Medical Examiner Association meeting? I know they have local meetings. You know, in New Jersey, if they because I think just presenting the data, they can go, that's a problem. We need to fix that. You know, getting that disinformation in their hands.
I can definitely consider it for New Jersey. I need funding to go to anything national. So if I kindly request NCEH to provide. So, no, I'm just joking. Okay, yes, sir.
So what? This has been a great presentation, a great session. One thing, two comments. One is in your presentation, one thing that really wasn't addressed that I think needs to be addressed is the issue of the pop-up. On the electronic death record that could be there that can facilitate an alert to whoever is filling out the death certificate during the aftermath of an event, a disaster, or whatever, that can be a reminder to the clinician or to the NE that says, if you think this is directly or indirectly associated, check this box or, you know, indicate that. So that could be an aid. In addition to the training that you recommended, and which I think is important, and the other piece that you mentioned was the training you didn't get as a physician should be there, maybe not in medical school, but once you're licensed or whatever. But so that's one thing, and you can respond to that. But the second one that I wanted to mention is more just to thank both of you, because these are really good examples of the value, and I would say the importance of doing disaster epidemiology. Of spending the time, spending the resources to dig deeper, to understand, because ideally we want to be able to lessen the impact of disasters in the future. If we don't do this work, we're not going to be able to do that. And here's the shameless plug of my comment, and that is if you're interested in that, Jessica Worster over here, is the staff person for CSTE. Raise your hand again, they weren't looking. She is the staff person for CSTE. that staffs the Disaster EPI Subcommittee, and we'd love to have you join us to learn about what we're doing, to learn from you about what you all are doing to move this forward, because I think we're doing that. So I'll stop there. But so you may want to comment, but I really want to thank both of you for this great work.
Well, thanks so much for the kind words. Regarding the second point about training as far as medical students or residents or licensed physicians, that would be tricky on a national level from my current position, but okay, definitely something we can keep in mind. So get right on it. So the first one is an interesting point. So I've had some sort of casual discussions with folks from New York City, and I believe Ohio actually does something similar, which is what was being referred to was that during a disaster, you sort of flip on a light switch in your EDRS system where any deaths that are certified while the flip is on, when you're doing it, a pop-up comes up and says, if you think this death is due to this, you know, ongoing hurricane or whatever, then, you know, check this box or put it in or do something to indicate that on the death certificate. And actually, New York City's 44 deaths, which were direct causes, are all very well documented. I've actually had conversations with some of the folks over there. So they had a system like that. So, and then you can turn it off whenever you want to. So 4 weeks later, 8 weeks later, whatever, you decide, okay, well, we don't really need to remind people, you can turn it off. So suffice it to say, we are in some preliminary discussions about maybe some modifications to our system in New Jersey, but no firm decisions have been made. Yes, ma'am.
Like another shameless plug. Our registrar, we're managing these systems. You know, EDRS is becoming now, we don't have in all jurisdictions, but it's becoming like the electricity it pays there. Like you said, just pop up and it goes. That little feature is going to cost our system $25,000. Okay? Now, luckily, preparedness is going to help us, but that's like the first amount of money I've ever gotten from our preparedness program. So that money's starting to be available. But jurisdictions are having difficulty, and I've gone around and listened to a lot of things people want for attached to our systems, and there's something every time I come to a meeting, there's a new thing. And we want the data used, and we want them used properly, but please remember, these things are not cheap. I spent $4.5 million on my system, and they don't come free. And we're paying for them for the poor widow that has to go and get their certificate for their family members to adjudicate their claims. So just remember, if you could please, it's not magic, and they are costly. And so wherever you can help your vital registrar to justify money to support these systems, please do it, because many of our states cannot get legislatures to pay attention.
And I think that's very, just for people to think about the PEP grant, you know, the Public Health Emergency Preparedness Grant, because with the electronic death registration, mass fatality, EPI surveillance, and data sharing are three of the capabilities, and this could, again, like you said, you know, pushing money that way to the vital registrars is needed from the public health and preparedness side.
Okay. Give both our speakers another round of applause.